Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. We have our interview today with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, beginning at the second segment of the program today. So Al will be doing the program, and I will be giving you the market updates for August 7th, 2014. We're days in the market. It's just like they don't know what to do, and it looks like, to me, it's the beginning of a takeoff, and a takeoff in gold and silver and a takedown in the paper markets. We had gold up today at 570 at 1312 off the high of 1350. It was sort of struggling a little bit for most of the day, but with the news with Iraq, we'll be talking about that here in just a little bit. It seemed to take a note of that and turned around, and at least it gave us 570 to the upside. Silver was down 9 cents, didn't follow along, but I have no doubts that it will at $20.01. Platinum is up 16 at 1479, and palladium up 6 at 858. And I would think that was also a play with Russia, because of they're beginning to do the tit for tat type of sanctions, and they have eliminated chickens from the U.S. And certainly Tyson got hit most today. I believe their shares were down about 2% on the day, but Russia doesn't import. And we don't export that many chickens to Russia. And unfortunately, I think the ones that will be hurt the most could be the people. They're going to have to seek elsewhere, maybe get their chickens from China. Who knows where they might get it and replace it. But the chicken farmers and growers have decided to most of the chickens stay right here domestically. And Americans eat a lot of chicken, and they certainly plump up those chickens with all those antibiotics and growth hormones and everything else. So you might think you're eating healthy, but I'm not so sure that chickens are what they used to be. So we did get that today in the markets. There was a little bit of U.S. economic data that was released today, the weekly jobless claims report. That was an upbeat number. Of course, you wouldn't expect anything different. First time weekly jobless claims in the U.S. fell by 14,000. and it was a seasonally adjusted to 289,000 during the week to Saturday, and that was, of course, was released by the Labor Department today. It was below consensus expectations, and they were looking somewhere between 300 and 315. And, of course, you know, we always have these revisions. The government revised up the prior weekly's tally for initial jobless claims to 303 from the originally reported 302. When that first was released, that's when we had the most pressure on gold today. You even saw the stock market a little bit higher. But again, once the information came out about Iraq, you have the Dow. And the Dow actually did come off the lows, but it closed at 75 points to the downside at 16,368. The NASDAQ was down 20 at 43.34. The S&P was down 10 at 19.09. And the 10-year yield, 2.42%, down 0.05. So again, the stocks end. I think tomorrow is going to be an interesting day. And I think that the stocks are going to continue to fall. And even Draghi came out. And of course, we knew exactly what he was going to, you know, what else was he going to say? Of course, they're going to keep rates low for an extended period of time. I mean, that's really no surprise. He said that the existing monetary accommodation should get the Eurozone economy back on track. But he also reiterated that the Governing Council was willing to do whatever is necessary, adding that interest rates will remain low for an extended time. So they're going to continue to do their, and they're ready to use any type of unconventional measure in order to keep things flowing, as long as they're, you know, to keep things, well, they're trying to stimulate their economies, but again, to keep their stock markets high, because this is what they have, this is what they have accomplished. The economies aren't doing anything, but their stock markets are doing great. Of course, there was a little bit of pressure on them for the past couple of days. The European markets were to the downside, but, he came out and he said, I can only reaffirm that the Governing Council is unanimous in its commitment towards the use of unconventional measures like ABS purchases, like quantitative easing, if our medium-term outlook for inflation were to change. And in reading some of his remarks, He's got to have the same speech writer that our Federal Reserve has. I mean, it's almost identical. It's like all they have to do is change the names, change the country, and perhaps change reference to dollars and euros. But certainly everything else just remains the same. Available information remains consistent with our assessment of a continued moderate and uneven recovery of the euro area economy, with low rates of inflation and subdued monetary and credit dynamics. At the same time, inflation expectations for the euro area over the medium to long term continue to be firmly anchored in line with our aim of maintaining inflation rates below, but close to, I'll let you guess it, just what do you think their inflation rate is? You got it, 2%. So, of course, as I mentioned, just change the names and it's the same speech and the same dribble that comes from both the policymakers, the monetary policy makers. Iraq did come out, or I should say that is, and again, oil was up slightly too, and I don't think I mentioned the USDX today. That was, let me see where that is at. The USDX today was trading at 0.11 at 81.51, and that is the highest level since September of 2013. And, you know, improving economic news and geopolitical events. And, of course, anytime you have those geopolitical events, it's going to give our dollar some strength. So we certainly could see it continue in the strength if the situations in Iraq and Russia certainly do heat up. But President Obama is considering airstrikes on airdrops of food and medicine to address the humanitarian crisis among as many as 40,000 members of religious minorities. Now, this is in northern Iraq, and heaven forbid they say Christians, okay? There's a lot of Christians in Iraq that are on that mountain. And but no, they don't dare say Christians. Heaven knows they are religious minorities in Iraq who have been dying of heat and thirst on a mountaintop where they took shelter after death threats from the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And there's been meetings with Obama has met with the national security at the White House this morning, and he's weighing his options. And of course, that is ranging from dropping humanitarian supplies, not dropping humans, but humanitarian supplies on this Mount Sinjar to military strikes on the fighters. And the fighter is at the base of the mountain, so that people don't have a choice. They're either going to die from lack of food and water, or if they come off the mountain, they get shot and killed. Those are their options. So, and there's 40,000 of them already. I believe about 40 children have died from the heat and dehydration. And this is according to UNICEF. Well, as many 40,000 people have been sheltering in the bare mountains without food, water, or access to supplies. So where is the concern for these children? And where is the concern for these people? Are they just collateral damage? Are they just collateral damage like the people in Gaza? Like the people that get shot down in airplanes? People who lose their lives to the whims of the New World Order? And yeah, I get it. It's a whole different new world. And there is going to be collateral damage, but it's unnecessary. And when we talk about Gaza, you know, there was, what, 1,900, 2,000 people that have died in the conflict, the most recent conflict between Israel and the Gaza. And the report that I read today, is this why we're giving millions of dollars more to Israel for their iron domes? Here's a European idea. It's like, oh, maybe this, you know, the light bulb just went in on our heads. That maybe we can help those poor Gaza folks. Maybe this is a way we can help those poor people and to help end the devastating conflict. This idea, and I'll talk about this idea in just a second, is beginning to gain traction. But it comes out like, oh, this is just a great idea, and you know, we'll contemplate this. But maybe this is behind the whole conflict that started this latest one. And the idea to develop the port, to develop Gaza's port to reopen the besieged territory to the rest of the world through the Cypriot port, with international monitors assuring that no weapons get through. Across Europe, you have governments that are warming to the idea, to this proposal, that it'll give a 27-mile strip on Israel's southern border, such as it'll give them a so-called economic lifeline. And they look to Gaza as it was once a thriving port in ancient times. And, you know, they're, oh, this makes it sound like, gee, what a great idea this would be. And maybe these people would be able to live in peace and we'll help out these poor people. So from Berlin to London to the European Union headquarters in Brussels, a blueprint for a post-war Gaza centers, both on meeting Israeli security needs and on developing Gaza to improve living conditions there. The latter implies that borders with neighbors Israel and Egypt and the sea be as transparent as conditions allow. What do you think they would really do to this port? They certainly would build it up. They would build hotels and casinos and those involved in rebuilding become more and more wealthy. And it just kind of reminds me of what we often say on this program, gee, we are here to help. So a lot of lives lost, an idea. We'll see if the 27-mile strip proposal actually goes through, but I can't imagine that it wouldn't. And so again, I wonder if this was the real reason that this latest conflict took hold and that these people had to die just so they could rebuild and have a new proposal blueprint to rebuilding the port. So kind of makes you wonder, and it's kind of disgusting, but this is the world in which we live in today. Another hot topic, so we'll have to see when he announces if we are going to do anything in Iraq. I saw that Congress was going to be called back for a special session. I'm assuming it has to do with Iraq. So perhaps, you know, he has said time and time again, no boots on the ground, but perhaps this time will be a little bit different. The American people, it's amazing what they worry about. It's like they don't worry about war. They don't worry about Wall Street. They don't worry about the effects of quantitative easing. They don't worry about wages. They don't worry about jobs. Everything is great. They don't worry about China. They don't worry that much about Russia. But I'll tell you what, when you bring in immigration, that does stir the dust with the American people. It gets them fired up, riled up. There was a Reuters and an online internet poll that showed Americans are deeply worried about illegal immigration, how it is threatening the nation's culture. Where are we at a culture? Where's our culture anymore? But anyway, threatening the nation's culture and economy. So it takes the immigration to wake people up just a little bit and maybe worry about the economy, which means, you know, because the stock market is high, they relate to that the economy is doing better, even though we could show sign after sign after sign that it isn't. 70% of Americans, including 86% of Republicans, which is no surprise, believe undocumented immigrants threaten traditional U.S. beliefs and customs. And that was according to the poll. The findings suggest immigration could join Obamacare. The Americans didn't worry about Obamacare either. And the economy as a hot-button issue that encourages more Republicans to vote in November's congressional election. With Congress failing to agree on broad immigration reforms, Obama could act alone in the next few weeks to give work permits to up to 5 million undocumented immigrants and delay some deportations, according to media reports. 63% of people in the online survey also said immigrants place a burden on the economy. And it's surprising that it's only 63%. 45% of people in the poll carried out between July 15th and the 22nd said that the number of immigrants legally allowed to enter the country should be reduced. That was 45%. Only 17% thought more legal immigrants should be allowed to come to the United States. 38% said the number should stay the same. So even though they might get the dust feathered up, those numbers are still a shame. They should all be much, much higher in most of those. But I also see the poll also showed that voters see immigration as the third most important problem facing the nation. Third most. The number one was the economy, which kind of doesn't make sense because it takes the immigration to worry about the economy, but yet everything else they see and all the numbers that show they think the economy is great. 76% of people in the region said undocumented immigrants threaten American beliefs and customs compared to 70% nationally. So just kind of interesting, and we're just about ready to take a break here. We have some 90% silver coinage in. They're a great buy. It's a great time to be buying some of that 90% silver to add it to your portfolios. We can sell them out. We've kind of logged them up in $25 face value bags, and the cost on that is $425. That does include your shipping costs, so it really is a great little buy because you also get a free Silver Eagle. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, we do archive the program. So until then, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe. I guess the music's not waiting for me.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett. He is the author, publisher of The Corbett Report, which you can find at Corbett, CORBETTREPORT.com. James has been living and working in Japan since 2004. Started the Corbett Report in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's also an editorial writer for the International Forecaster, a weekly e-newsletter created by the recently deceased economic analyst Bob Chapman. And we always look forward to James' comments and insights. And hello, James.
Hi, Alfred. I look forward to being here, too. Thank you for having me on.
I always enjoy it. I always wind up learning something. At least I'm pretty sure I learned things. I come away with different opinions than I had when I started, so I guess that's learning. What's new? What do you think is important in the economy, global economy? Anything that you particularly think have as critical in the last week or so?
Well, I don't want to make too much of it. Maybe it's not critical, but something that certainly caught my eye and that I wrote about in the most recent Forecaster is a new physically deliverable gold contract that is being traded or is going to be traded on the Singapore Exchange, the SGX, starting in September, which I think is going to be a pretty
significant... Singapore or Shanghai?
Singapore. Okay. Shanghai is a different creature altogether, but in Singapore, they're apparently going to start in September a contract for a physically deliverable kilobar gold contract. And basically, the point of this is going to be to establish a transparent price mechanism for primarily for wholesalers who are looking for a way to find, to get that discovery for gold, and can bypass the vagaries of a system where, you know, they're buying from various suppliers and, you know, eyeing the spot price and trying to find the best deal. Well, here it's going to be completely transparent. It's going to be traded on the exchange. So so this was announced at the London Bullion Market Association's LBMA Market Forum, which I have two conflicting sources. One says that it was being held. It was held in Singapore for the first time ever. The London Bullion Market Association's Market Forum was held in Singapore just late last month, where they announced this new contract was going ahead. And you had the managing director of the Far East World Gold Council, Albert Cheng, saying, "This is a wholesale, physical settled, exchange traded contract for kilobar. It will satisfy the multi-tier, second-tier band, mid-tier bullion trader who want to have a source of kilobar at a price that they can see from the exchange, and then they can redistribute to their customer or send it to jewelry manufacturers for them to make into jewelry." So I think this is going to be a significant step towards having a better idea, being able to point to an actual price on the physical gold market, and as opposed to the spot price, which, as we know, is heavily influenced by the paper gold market, which, of course, is leveraged something like 100 to 1, 100 ounces of notional paper gold for every actual physical ounce that exists.
We got an article here from something called SRS Rocco Reports. All right, apparently credible source. Chinese silver inventory is nearly 90% depleted at Shanghai Futures Exchange. Now, the essence of this article is that in the last few months, well, over the course of the last year, actually, the amount of silver at the Shanghai Futures Exchange has been depleted by 90%. Now, this is cause for concern, because you have to wonder, the intent of the Shanghai Futures Exchange was to provide physical gold, physical silver. And they are being sold out. And I think the reason is perhaps that they're pricing their silver at the same price as the paper silver on the American markets. If they are, they're literally giving their physical silver away. The only way that market can survive, in my opinion, is they've got to pay a premium price for silver. They can't sell silver at the same prices you can get it on the New York markets and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. There's got to be a premium, and that will draw people in. People want to sell silver. They'll say, "Look, I can get an extra $5 an ounce at the Chinese Silver Exchange Chinese silver future, but I can get an extra $5 an ounce, and therefore I will sell at that location." Do you follow what I'm saying? When people flood in because they can get more, then the inventory will increase. But if they don't raise their physical price but keep selling physical price at paper prices, at paper silver price, they're going to be put out of business. The Wiley Oriental in this situation, if they're selling it at paper prices, the Wiley Oriental is being outfoxed.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I mean, certainly the idea that the paper price is being used to sell the physically deliverable silver is pretty ridiculous, because of course we know there is a premium for actual physical delivery, and that should be included in the price. Although interestingly, I'm just looking at the gold silver ratio right now, and it is up on the month. I'm looking at the 30-day gold-silver ratio, and it's gone from about 62.5 a month ago to 65.5 right now. So, interestingly, gold is taking off a little bit at the moment against silver. I'm not sure what that might indicate, but again, that's the paper
silver
price.
Conversely, silver is falling relative to gold, but silver is always more volatile. Where do you think, a lot of people think that gold-silver ratio, they are buying silver because they believe that ratio is going to go back toward its historical average in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. And if it does, those people who invest in silver are going to make much more money than those people who invest in gold. What do you think about that historical average? Do you think we're going to go there?
I want to say yes. I mean, I don't see why any reason why it wouldn't return to that that equilibrium at some point. And again, I think there's a lot of paper manipulation that goes on in these markets that skew that. And I think that eventually, when that is circumvented, whether that's through some sort of new physical contract that starts to give us a better idea of the actual price and starts to actually affect the spot price, or however that functions, whenever that rubber band basically gets stretched to the point where it snaps, I would expect gold and silver to return to historical ratios, and I would expect a bigger upside on silver. But again, I suppose I don't have anything concrete to say in regards to why that is. I just think that, you know, it has been an historical relationship between the two, and I don't see any reason why that wouldn't maintain. I think the only reason that has been skewed is because of the different ways that the gold and silver fixes have been manipulated.
I think one of the things that I look at as a peculiar kind of clue, it's like reading tea leaves in the bottom of the coffee cup or the teacup or whatever, is the Gold Eagle is priced at $50, and the Silver Eagle is priced at $1. That's what they put, and I don't mean one of our dollars today, but that's the ratio on the Gold and Silver Eagles, 50-1. And I wonder if that number, they just chose those numbers, just threw a dart at the dartboard, and it came up 50, and they said, all right, let's do 50-1. We'll say $50 for an ounce of gold to $1 for an ounce of silver. Is it just a random event, or is that a clue to what the powers that be expect the ratio of gold to silver to be at some point in the future?
My sense would be that is more of a kind of dart at a dartboard than something that's been planned or manipulated. But I mean, who knows really? But I mean, we have seen the price going around that 50-60. The ratio has been in that 50-60 range for a number of years now. So I mean, it's not off from what the paper markets are supposedly telling us the prices are.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and I wonder about that. I wonder, is this just a coincidence? And if it's true, if it turned out that a 50-1 ratio is in our future, well, then the profits to be made on silver as compared to gold are still greater, but they're nowhere near as great as some people suppose. So we'll watch and see. It's just, but again, you get your tea leaves, I have mine. Mm-hmm. I've got a photograph here. I'm looking news report, Dorothea Lange's photos of the Dust Bowl, and they were photographed back in 1935, 39. And the reason I mention this is this is from the midst to the Great Depression, and she has some stark black and white photographs that, you know, the fields ruined, the agriculture is just not there, sand drifts covering what was formerly agricultural land. Do you think that there's a similarity between that and the drought that's taking place in California right now? And is the similarity, is it just coincidental? Or is there something about depressions that run in a cycle that are at least partially influenced by the weather?
Now, you see, that is a fascinating hypothesis, and I have never seen any actual research on this. I'm sure there is some, but I've just never seen that connection explicitly being researched. And my sense would be that yes, there will be a connection there. Obviously, we know that there is a strong a cyclical nature to climate patterns, as well as a cyclical nature to booms and busts. And it's interesting to see if they would line up on a chart. And I mean, it would certainly make sense as a causal relation. Obviously, if you're having trouble growing crops or providing produce to the markets, it is going to have an economic effect that will have a knock-on effect into other parts of the market. So it certainly makes sense from that perspective. And I think we all understand how the Great Depression was exacerbated by the Dust Bowl of the 30s. Are we seeing that in terms of what's happening in California right now? I mean, I would say it's a different beast insofar as it's more limited than it was in the 30s. But I mean, the effects on the
so far.
I mean, we have to see how that plays out, and certainly the effects on the California economy might be similar in nature. As we know, California is already on the economic precipice in so many different ways. So, I mean, it's something certainly to keep in mind, and I would be interested to see any sort of research that's been done along those lines.
Well, the thing that's also interesting about it is whether or not these droughts happen on a cyclical basis that are due to some natural force, sunspots, right? Maybe that has something to do with it. But is there a cycle where we can expect to see drought every 50 years, 80 years, 100 years? I don't know how often it comes by, but is there a cycle? And when it happens, oddly, coincidentally, we get a recession or a depression at the same time. Shouldn't be surprising. But it's one of those indicators. It shouldn't be surprising that if there's a drought, that there is some sort of an economic adverse consequence. But
the other factor to keep in mind with all of this is that now we live in a very different scientific age than we did in the 30s, and now we really do have various technologies for weather manipulation at various stages of development. I mean, in its crudest form, of course, we've had cloud seeding and things of that nature for half a century, more than that now. Of course, there are other technologies that are constantly being developed, and even mainline history now talks about the attempts to start typhoons in Vietnam during the Vietnam War and things of that nature. Here we are a few decades on from there. And one of the interesting factors with regard to that is the idea of Enron creating a futures market for weather events, with the possibility that, I mean, if someone did have access to technology that could influence weather, even just a little bit, one way or the other, towards drought or towards flood or what have you, I mean, there would be potentially lots of money to be made on those markets because of that. I did a report on that on my radio program, my now defunct radio program, a couple of years ago. People can find that on my website. Just search weather modification or something along those lines, Enron weather, and you will find that interview I did along those lines. I mean, I think that's something at least we should be keeping in mind when we start to talk about this, because, of course, again, we are not exactly just hapless victims of the weather at this point. We can shape some of these events to a certain extent, and even if it's rather crude at the moment, it still, I mean, can give someone a comparative advantage, and it can be used absolutely for warfare purposes as well. I mean, if you want to economically destroy a nation, imagine if you had the power to influence droughts or floods or things of that nature.
The problem with weather modification is the weather is all driven by the sun, from my perspective, my understanding. How much heat does the sun put into the planet, and based on that, how much water is evaporated out of the ocean, how much goes up in the sky and produces rain, or if there's not enough, it produces drought. The sun drives it, and insofar as that's true, this is a zero-sum game. If we do weather modification and we cause it to rain dramatically in some part of the world, there's only so much moisture in the atmosphere. If we're making it rain artificially in one part of the world, we are necessarily depriving another part of the world of the rain it would normally get. So weather modification is not a situation where I'm just going to make it snow in Detroit. I've got the equipment, I'm making snow in Detroit. Well, that's interesting, but you're also going to make something bad happen in Chicago or maybe in New York or wherever, if you catch my drift. It's a zero-sum game. If it's you get drought here, you're going to get extra rain someplace else and maybe flood people out. Maybe they die in the floods. See my point?
I certainly do, and I agree with that point in general. I guess there's two kind of separate points there. One is there are always unintended consequences to these types of manipulations, and these aren't godlike powers. You can't just do anything you want. It is going to have some knock-on effects. And the other part of that slips my mind, but there was another part that I was going to talk about.
Well, you'll have an opportunity to see if you remember it. When we break, we're going to take some commercial announcements. I'm here with James Corbett from The Corbett Report, corbettreport.com. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
provide internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is a coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. My guest is James Corbett from The Corbett Report. At, you can CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. You can learn more about James's thoughts on the economy and the political system and so on. And James is writing in from Japan. He's been living there for the last 10 years now, I believe. And here's an article that deals with Japan, touches on it. What's the source of this? Yahoo Finance. I'm not sure who wrote this besides Yahoo Finance, but in any case, that's where it's reproduced. Japan defense paper warns of China's dangerous acts in sea, air. That's the headline. Japan warned Tuesday that China's dangerous acts over territorial claims in the East China Sea could lead to unintended consequences in the region as fears grow of a potential military clash. You've probably seen or heard about this paper insofar as you're living in Japan. Is this just a political ploy? Just somebody trying to, Abe, trying to attract a little attention? Or is this a serious warning?
Well, at any rate, it certainly connects with many, many such warnings and things that we've heard in recent years. And this, I mean, is really just part of a piece of things that have gone both ways between from China to Japan and from Japan to China over the last 2 to 3 years is really where this has been coming to a peak. So again, this is nothing new. It's just part of a continuum of threats and provocations. There's been Chinese aircraft and that have gone into Japanese airspace. There's been Chinese boats that have come into or uh-huh. what Japan considers its waters, etc. Again, this is nothing particularly new. And in fact, it was at a conference. I want to say it was at Davos earlier this year, but I'm not completely 100% sure about that. But at any rate, at some type of international conference like that, I can't remember if it was China accusing Japan or Japan accusing China, but basically one was accusing the other of being like 1914 Germany and trying to provoke reaction and the unintended consequences and all of this. So again, this type of rhetoric's been floating around for years, and it certainly plays well with Abe's nationalist base here in Japan. It certainly plays to his political base, and vice versa in China. Of course, I think there's certainly a very large anti-Japanese sentiment that the leadership plays into and uses, I think, for their political purposes. So, I think both sides have invested interest in keeping this going.
Dangerous game, though. I mean, are they going to be able to stop before they go over the precipice? It's like dealing with a couple of kids again. One of them pokes one, the other one pokes him back, and they keep them, Mom, he did it first, and the rest of that sort of thing. Once these things get started, where do you find an adult to stop the kids before they actually hurt themselves? Is there an adult on the horizon there in Japan who might be able to stop these things from getting worse?
I wish there was, but anyone who could at least feasibly take that kind of role is unfortunately just serving to feed into it. And by that, of course, I mean Japan in the Asia Pacific region is and has been since the end of World War II a U.S. proxy in the region. Yeah. And unfortunately, the United States is just very much feeding into the growing tensions between not only Japan and China, but Korea and China, the Philippines and China, Indonesia and China. They're actively courting all of these governments in the region, and through a lot of them, selling them military technology to help combat the rising Chinese threats, and for others, like the Philippines, signing deals for increased U.S. military presence in the country, etc. So, again, unfortunately, anyone from the outside who at least would have the military muscle to enforce some sort of, boundaries and corners, and everyone go to their separate corner and think about what they've done.
Take time out.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, that's not happening.
I understand.
It's more like the bully on the playground inciting violence rather than the future.
It's not necessarily even the bully exactly. It's bully, but it's like a fight promoter who has said, let's you and him fight.
Yeah.
I'll stand over here and sell tickets and let you and this other guy fight.
Better analogy.
What's Japanese public sentiment relative to the idea that they are the government of Japan is functioning as a proxy for the United States? Are they aware, concerned, indifferent, angry?
They're certainly aware. And the question to which they are angry, I think, depends on what polls you're reading and what newspapers you're reading. But there is, certainly is a sense here that Japan understands itself as part of the U.S. military umbrella of the region. And there has always been an undercurrent of protest against that. And we've seen that boil over here from time to time. For example, I was just recently watching a British Pathé newsreel from 1960 at a time when the U.S.-Japan military security agreement was being revised. And this caused many Japanese to flood into the streets, and there were riots that were happening. It was a scene of pandemonium that it's difficult for me living here in 2014 Japan, looking at those types of riots and that type of political fervor that was happening at the time, where people were spilling onto the streets trying to protest against this military alliance that was taking place and taking shape at that time. That type of protest isn't happening right now, but certainly there are protests against what is perceived to be a remilitarization, a kind of reach back to Japan's imperial past. And the most dramatic example of that occurred last month when the Shinzo Abe government came out with a new interpretation of the Japanese constitution, which of course has its famous peace clause, Article 9, which is an article expressly renouncing war as a function of the Japanese government, as the Japanese state, forever. A pretty dramatic clause to include in a constitution for a country, but one that has been very much taken to heart by a lot of the population here. Abe, in his first role, as first try at prime minister about a decade ago, he also was talking about trying to change the constitution. This time he's actually succeeded in changing the interpretation so that now Japan considers that it has the right to collective self-defense, so that if one of its allies was in trouble, they would be able to provide military aid through the quote-unquote self-defense force. So a pretty bold reinterpretation. That in and of itself caused an awful lot of protest here on the streets. One person setting himself on fire in the Shinjuku station in Tokyo. So again, this is a pretty heated time in Japanese politics, and people are getting quite worked up about it both ways. And I think that this is consolidating a type of militaristic base and nationalistic base that supports Abe and what he's doing, as well as I think galvanizing the opposition to that. And my sense is that the opposition is slightly more in the majority, but Abe got into power because of his economic policies and his promises, and I have the sense that that will ultimately be his downfall.
Well, I won't be surprised about that. I would suspect that the reason the Japanese people are to some degree complacent about being a proxy for the United States, and the reason is the same reason they allowed Article 9 in their Constitution, insofar as they could depend on the United States to protect them from what they probably perceive as the greater threat of China. They're willing to be, all right, we'll be proxies as long as you're going to do our fighting for us. Now, if that were true, insofar as Abe is coming across and saying we need to remilitarize, to what extent does that reflect a growing nationalism in Japan and maybe a growing paranoia about China? And to what extent does it reflect the idea that they don't think they can count on the United States to continue to defend them?
I think you're right. There has to be both of those factors have to play a part in what's going on right now. I think the operative factor right now is the growing Chinese menace. And without that menace, or at least the perception of it in Japan, I don't think what's happening right now would be politically possible. The idea that the United States is no longer really able to play that protective role, I think most people here would still see the U.S. as kind of the military big brother. And obviously there's always been a bit of opposition to the U.S. military presence here, but it's always been allowed because, exactly as you say, I mean, even going back to before the war ended, there were noted economists here in Japan who were basically making the case we shouldn't rearm, you know, when we lose, because by 43, 44, it was getting pretty obvious that they were going to lose at some point. They were already making that case, you know, we shouldn't rearm because that would be just a drain on our economy. We are going to be an economic power in the wake of this war. We're going to be an industrial power, and it would just be an unnecessary diversion of our resources to try to build up some sort of military. So let's let the victors take care of that. And that's exactly what ended up happening. And I think there's always been that tacit kind of acceptance of that, because again, yeah, it does. I mean, let's offshore the military defense of the nation in a way. And it worked quite well for Japan during its run up to the bubble years, of course, and has not been working so well over the last couple of decades. And especially now that Japan feels more threatened by China. So I really think that the operative part of this is the Chinese menace. And I think that's being used as an excuse for why these changes need to take place.
We've got a report that Japan is issuing its own sanctions against Russia. They're joining in, helping to pile on Russia. And I'm curious, doesn't Japan have enough problems of its own without getting involved with Russia also?
Yeah, I would say so. But the question is, to what extent can they avoid that? I mean, and still be one of the sort of trusted allies of the U.S. in the region. I think to a certain extent,
is Japan actually imposing sanctions on Russia because the prime minister and the government says, let's sanction Russia, or are they still acting as proxy for the United States? The United States says, you guys sanction those guys.
Well, to a certain extent, Japan and Russia have their own history, and they still have some territorial disputes in northern Japan, where there's still a bit of tension there. So it's never been a really cozy relationship. So I don't think Japan is, you know, going out on a limb with this. I don't think they've ever had a lot of love for the Russian government. But having said that, I think that ultimately, in the long term, we could be seeing that change in a very concrete and interesting way. In fact, we've heard sort of speculation or rumors or ideas that Russia might be trying to court Japan more in the wake of their turn towards Asia as they're turning away from Europe in terms of finding export markets for their gas. And Japan may be one of those prime markets. Of course, Japan obviously heavily dependent on energy imports. And there's Russia, the world's largest gas exporter. If they can find a way to really connect those two, that would definitely be beneficial for both parties. But of course, that's not going to happen with the current political wranglings that are going on. So I think when we start to see Japan turning away from the U.S. foreign policy agenda and turning towards what would be considered its rivals, turning towards the Chinese economy, the Russian economy, which makes economic sense, if not political sense, when we start to see that, that's when I think we're starting to see the real complete shuffling of the deck. I mean, that would be a complete change. And I do see that happening over the course of the next decade or two decades. It makes all sorts of economic sense, but it's just obviously we're looking at something potentially like a war between now and then in order to change the mindset of the public here, who still would probably be horrified at that idea.
What do you suppose the economic consequences are? Are there changes taking place in Japan right now that are going to have economic consequences that will be felt in the United States within the next, say, 12, 24 months?
Well, the Japanese economy, especially the Japanese monetary situation, has a direct effect on the U.S. Mm-hmm. economy because, of course, the yen has been used for its carry trade for a long time. The spread between the near zero interest rate that investors can get on the yen, and of course then they take that that money and they take it over to the United States and invest in the stock market. So we've always seen that relationship for the last couple of decades now that Japan has been in its stagnant phase. And that's been affected by the fact that the Federal Reserve has brought interest rates down very, very low. And so it kind of takes the edge off of that carry trade. But as we see the Fed unwinding from quantitative easing, and as we potentially see the yields starting to rise again, we see that spread growing, and we might see a greater yen carry trade. So much rides on the JPY-USD ratio, that index. And when we see Zero Hedge does a great job of keeping track of this. Every time there's a significant fluctuation in that JPY-USD valuation, we see a knock-on effect in the stock markets the very next day. And it's quite interesting to watch that. The volatility directly relates to volatility in the American stock market. So this does have an effect on what's happening in the U.S. economy. And if we were to see something, you know, catastrophic happen here, as we're really facing here in Japan with all of these crazy, the crazy amount of debt, for example, that the Japanese government is racking up, if we were to see a real collapse in the currency, I think that would definitely have a huge effect on the U.S. economy as that yen carry trade unwinds.
We're going to have to let it go with that. If the Japanese currency has a serious problem, we're going to see a serious effect in this country. We're out of time, James. I want to thank you for being on the program. This was James Corbett from CorbettReport.com, CORBETT, Report.com. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back mañana. In the meantime, with the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.